Welcome to episode 20 of the Walk and Talk podcast. I'm Greg Johnson, and today is Sunday, May 17th, 2020. The topic for this episode is going to be something I call the seven relationships, and it's a measure for your own business if you're an entrepreneur, or businesses that you're considering being a customer of, or supporting, or investing in. And it even applies to organizations. So here are the seven relationships. I'm going to give you the overview and then drill in a little deeper to each one of these relationship categories. And these are in no particular order of priority, but let's begin. So each business has relationships that can be described in the following seven different ways. There are employees, there are customers, there are suppliers, typically of materials and ingredients if it's food. There are service providers, so also what might be considered a B2B, a business-to-business relationship, someone offering services. Then influencers, then the community, the immediate community, and finally, the seventh, charity and the world. So giving back to nonprofits beyond just your local community. Of these seven relationships, some of them are a little bit overlapping or similar. So suppliers and service providers are similar in that they are bringing some product or service to the company. And the community, giving, and charity are often lumped together. But I'm going to have these broken out separately. Category number one, employees. We can evaluate a company based on how it treats its employees, or if it's an employee-owned company, then we could just look at the workplace culture and what the work experience is for those at that company. And it's certainly nice if everyone has a positive experience and financially rewarding experience. Nobody wants to be working in a company where there's some favoritism, which does not seem merit-based, but seems somewhat arbitrary. And some people get more perks and benefits than others. That's not going to create a positive workplace culture. So typically, however the hierarchy is set up, even if there are owners and CEOs at the top, and then some middle managers, and then some lower level managers, and then some employees, and if those are all people earning at different pay scales, that's somewhat understandable as people take on more responsibility, harder work, more hours, etc., that they'd be compensated accordingly. So not every company needs to have a sort of horizontal employee-owned structure to be a pleasant place to work, but and that's no guarantee that a business would be pleasant to work at just because it's employee owned. So there are a number of factors, but in general, one would want to see that a large number of the employees are having a positive experience, both experientially and financially in their job. So that's relationship number one, the employees. And then relationship number two, customers. How are customers treated before, during, after the sale? We've all heard those experiences people have had where it was very easy to get through to the, you know, push one for sales, push two for service, right? There's hardly any waiting time when you push one. And when you push two for service, you get some message that says, "We're sorry, we're experiencing unusually high call volume. Your call is important to us." Well, apparently not important enough to hire a few more people to take calls. Anyway, so the relationship with customers, we would want to see that it's of high quality at every point along the way in that relationship. And in the same way there is a workplace culture, there can be a customer culture of sorts where the customer base is a group of people who are positive about the products and help one another. That's also sort of part of the customer experience. And that can impact a company's reputation, even though it's really outside the control of the company. But if you have a really positive online user community, and maybe some of those people are paid or given discounts or perks or something to reward them for their time volunteering otherwise, helping others with questions. You know, if there's that really reliable and responsive customer community support, then that's a real positive thing. And similarly, if it's lacking, or if maybe there are some sort of fanboys out there that get a little bit too much overzealous criticizing other products or talking down to people, that can rub people the wrong way and have a negative impact on a company's reputation and their brand. The third relationship is suppliers. And this is usually referenced by little catchphrases like fair trade or responsibly sourced. And you would want to see that a company is engaging in fair labor practices and sustainable environmental practices, both in the local community and across the world. There have been examples of sort of woke, politically correct, hipster companies that are just doing great things in their local community, but it turns out that their clothing or coffee or whatever it might be is acquired through less than admirable ways. And so you want there to be consistency and to know that your support of this company is going to eventually have a positive ripple effect around the world because they are equitably engaged with workers and other business partners, and their environmental responsibility is admirable. And so that is the supplier's relationship. And the environment is sometimes referred to as one of the triple bottom lines when you're looking at companies. It really permeates all of these, that in how a company interacts with their employees, do they offer recycling on premises? In how they interact with their customers, do they provide recyclable materials and minimal waste in their packaging? In how they interact with their suppliers, etc. You see how the environmental stewardship and responsibility is at every level. So there's not just like one little line item that's the environment, it's everything. Okay, so that's suppliers, and then service providers. Service providers would be people who are the shipping company, the cleaning company, the lawn care company, whoever it is that you regularly do business with. In the course of doing the business that you do, those people are providing services, and your fairness with them and respectfulness with them is important, and it reflects on the company, the company's reputation. And it really will be in a measurable way having either a positive or negative impact in the community. And those suppliers might be local, like the examples I just gave, or the suppliers might be somewhere else. Maybe the hosting company or some other online electronic service that's being provided. And again, across all of these relationships, there should be respect and an effort to be fair. There are some books that have been written about deal making and negotiations and business relationships, and those books sort of emphasize how to extract the maximum amount of value from other individuals and entities and the planet, and maximize your profit and minimize what you pay out and give to others. That's one approach, but that's not a happy way to live life, and it doesn't create a better world. So across all of these relationships, just like we think about environmental considerations, we would think about how we are making decisions and creating negotiations that are really good for everyone involved. There can even be scenarios where you are giving more than you're taking. And let me describe that. And I think of it in terms of customers, but there could be other examples. Let's say someone comes to me and they have a need in their business, and it's a tech need. And so I'm going to help them with their business. I know that I need to make a certain amount of money just to pay the bills, but I want to really give this company something of value. Here's an example. I had a call just a few days ago. A call came in. Somebody's entire business was offline. They had no phones. They had no internet. They could not communicate with customers. They couldn't receive money. They couldn't do anything. Their whole operation was down. And I don't know how you measure or quantify or what metrics you'd use, but in a few minutes, I was able to bring the entire operation back up, and they were very appreciative. So there's an example where if I bill them, which I probably won't, and if I were to bill them relative to the value that they got from having their business back online and not experiencing more downtime, then that bill might have been thousands of dollars. And that happens quite frequently. I will give someone some service that to them is worth a lot, and to me did not require too much time or expense on my part. A lot of that's because of having, you know, 30 years of experience doing tech work. But those are examples where I can give more than I take. And even on a project, if I'm working with somebody and I work 3 hours on a project and I have my standard hourly rate, I could bill them for the full 3 hours, but sometimes I'll just bill them for 2.5, or, you know, round it down. If it's 3 hours and 15 minutes, I'll round it down to 3. I'm always trying to give more than expected and take less than expected, and to over deliver. And they call it under promise, you know, so on time and under budget. But that's a good relationship to have with everyone, with the suppliers, with the customers, with the employees, with everybody. So that touches on every category. Relationship number 5 would be the influencers, who can broadly be described as perhaps advertisers and product reviewers and the people who might be writing articles or posting videos about your product or service that you don't even have a relationship with yet. But all of those people who will influence customer opinion or public opinion about your product, your service, your organization, they can all be categorized, let's say, as influencers, and perhaps it's helpful to break that down into smaller categories. But what I want to talk about first in this category of influencers is how companies have been really thoughtful with me when I have created reviews, either video or written reviews, of their products, services, and companies. And I really appreciate that. And so something I like to say is that kindness is the new currency. And what that means is that thoughtfulness, generosity, respectfulness, kindness, all of these things are like a currency. They have value. And they certainly have value in the sense of having a positive impact on somebody's day and on their health, right? And they're certainly going to have a tangible impact on a company. Hopefully, these things are done in a sincere way. Perhaps sometimes they're a little formulaic and schmaltzy and scripted, but at least, A for effort. But however it happens, acts of thoughtfulness and kindness are valuable and can positively impact the world. So that, of course, again, it touches on every area and every relationship, sort of like the environment I spoke about earlier. But with influencers, sometimes a company will reach out and show their appreciation for a review after the review happens. Because, sometimes if a company gives a person a product or pays them up front, that needs to be disclosed in the review, because the review is sort of like an advertisement at that point. And some reviewers will be quick to explain that receiving a product, and depending on the value of the product and the usefulness and how much the product means to them, that may or may not influence their review. And many will say that it doesn't. If they're receiving lots of products and writing reviews on all of them, then there's no particular item that's going to get a better review than another, because they received an equal payment or value for writing those reviews or creating those videos. There is a benefit to the ongoing receipt of products. So for product reviewers that are just continually receiving items to review, there's no one item in particular that they're going to give a good review to or for, but they will have an incentive to continue receiving those items, because they either have a direct value to them, or even if they were to sell them on eBay or something, they have some value. Give them away as gifts. In the 1970s, 1980s, it was common, and maybe it still is today, but back then, with LP records or with books, it was common to see something that had a sticker or printed on it. It would say, "Review copy, not for resale." So they wanted to make sure, at least, that the person receiving that review copy was not benefiting financially from it. And with a book or an LP record, the idea was that they wouldn't resell it. And, once they're done with the book, maybe there was some value in that or listening to the LP record, but there wouldn't be any substantial ongoing benefit as there might otherwise be for perhaps other products and services if somebody's getting them for free. But on one occasion, I wrote up some instructions, a tech document, for a product called Doximity. It's a video chat, well, at least the document I wrote was about their video chat platform for secure video conversations between doctors and patients. And presumably it could be used for conversations between doctors, but it's an alternative to people using, you know, Zoom or Skype or whatever platforms that are less secure. And Doximity's been around for a long time. They offer other online services for healthcare professionals. But I wrote that article because I thought it might be helpful for people who are wanting information about this new service, the video service, which was relatively new. And I just enjoy writing documentation. Well, to my surprise, that article became quite popular and eventually made its way to finding the attention of a VP in the company who shared it on LinkedIn, and that was very cool. So I started getting lots of page visitors from LinkedIn and elsewhere around the world. That's always nice. That's sort of a compensation in itself, even if you're not directly dealing with a company. It's always nice to get extra traffic to your website. I don't have ads, but for people that do, then that traffic converts into extra money. So anyway, then I reached out to the company to mention to them that I had the article written and that they could feel free to use it, and ask them if there might be anything else they'd like me to assist with. And they were just really appreciative, and they sent me a nice gift box of some coffee and a nice branded coffee mug. So there was an example of an experience where I'd already put some effort out and the company reached out to me to show some appreciation. And that's an example of what I'm talking about then with the influencers and how to treat them well. Another similar experience that happened recently was with a company that sells different nut milk, nut drinks, cashew, almond. It's called Elmhurst 1925. I really liked their advertising on Facebook, and then I would literally click like, but I enjoyed seeing their ads because the quality of the video and the quality of the product photos was really good. So I tend to follow and like and share anytime I see high quality advertising that resonates with me. And I then start to see more and more of it from the organizations or companies that I'm following, and then from new ones. So Elmhurst 1925 was one. And eventually I thought, you know, this seems like a pretty cool company and they have a nice product. So I wrote them through Facebook and said, hey, I'd really like to do a review of your product if that was possible. And if you could send me some samples, that would give me a chance to do that without having, you know, any out-of-pocket cost to me. So they responded right away. So that's hurdle number one. You know, if the company responds right away, that's a good sign. And they were more than happy to send some samples. So I appreciated that, their responsiveness and thoughtfulness. And there, again, is an example where I'm not being paid to do advertising. But what really had more value to me, I guess, was, going back to what I said earlier, kindness is the new currency, that I like to reward that kind of behavior in individuals, in organizations, in companies. I'd like to see more of it in the world. So yeah, the product arrived and they were very generous in that. They sent a 6-pack box of a sample set of different cashew, almond, oat milk products that they have. And I provided what I would like to think was a fairly balanced and fair and transparent and honest video review, mentioning that they had sent the product to me. And so it was just a good experience all around. And I did like their products. So those are a couple of examples where I can point to and say, this is where some companies did what I think is a good practice in terms of showing appreciation, reaching out to influencers. There's, I should say, a fine line, though. When companies are doing this kind of thing, it needs to be sincere. And we've heard these bad examples of, well, examples of bad things where a pharmaceutical company might show their, quote, appreciation, quote, for a doctor who recommends their medicine. And at some point, appreciation kind of shifts into, you know, paying people off, and that's not good. So a company needs to be careful. And if you're evaluating a company based on how they treat their influencers, you know, they'd get poor marks for not showing appreciation. But if they show a little bit, you know, too much appreciation, I would look poorly on that. I think companies that are paying off people to be happy and excited about their products and say good things, that erodes the relationship. And it erodes the relationship with the customer as well. So some of these relationships can impinge on others. And that's an example where if a company is paying too much money to an influencer and customers see that happening, the customers are going to think, well, wait a minute, these reviews aren't really genuine. It's just paid off people who are mercenaries, advertising mercenaries for hire. You want to really avoid that happening. So it's a balance. Okay, so we've talked about the five relationships up to influencers. Next is community. It's common for companies to give back 5% to local charities. That happens a lot. That's sort of expected. And it's a nice gesture. But at some point, a person has to wonder, well, couldn't they just raise all their prices by 5% and then give away 5% and it's sort of costing them nothing? And maybe to some extent that does happen, that it's not that the employees and the CEOs and the managers and the product suppliers are all tightening their belts and choosing to take sack lunches to work so they can generate this extra revenue that's going to go to charity. They're giving out of an abundance that is perhaps calculated in. But let's not look at it in that cynical way. Let's just look at the benefit, which is when large companies take their influence and their money and do responsible things in some measure, that's good. In addition to giving back financially, which can seem a little bit like self-promotion and patting oneself on the back with the big signs as you enter the store, etc., there are other ways that companies can impact a community that are giving back, and they don't have to be in a monetary way. So if a company gets involved in promoting bicycle trails, well, that's not necessarily giving to any particular charity, but they're getting involved in that initiative and helping to ensure that there are more trails and there are better maintained trails throughout a community. That has an impact. Or let's look at an example here in the Iowa City, Coralville, North Liberty area in eastern Iowa. In Coralville, there is a grocery store called Hy-Vee. It's employee-owned. I think that means that employees have some sort of stock benefit with the company or something. And the Hy-Vee store, one of the ways they give back, in addition to giving financially to local charities, is that they have set aside an area of their parking lot for electric car charging. So that's a nice thing to do. And there's no oversized check photo opportunity where they're giving this money to some local charity. It's a tangible but not as easily measured way of giving back to the local community. So those are some examples. And also, I guess I would say, stores that offer specialty parking for electric vehicles closer to the storefront, as well as I've seen stores that have special parking for veterans, for law enforcement, etc. There are little ways that companies can impact the tone and impact the relationships that they have with the local community. And relationship number 7 is charity and the world. So beyond the more visible ways that a company can give, what are the ways they give back and impact the world that might be beyond something that directly influences their local community, which could, in some ways, result in more sales and local support for them? What are ways that companies give back to the world? So, some companies are involved in planting trees around the world. Other companies offer a kind of charitable giving that is impactful in a way that has a relationship to the product you're buying. So when you go into Walgreens, for example, to get a flu shot, they make it possible for someone who's economically challenged to get a flu shot as well. And if I understand it correctly, they do this around the world. But there are other examples of that. There are shoe companies that will give away a pair of shoes for every pair of shoes that you buy. And there are other companies that try to bring economic well-being to villages and small towns around the world where they do business. And these are important impacts that a company can have. I mentioned some of that previously when talking about suppliers. When there are suppliers in other places around the world, a positive relationship and a non-exploitive relationship with responsible suppliers can have a positive impact in communities around the world. So those are the 7 relationships. Number 1, employees. Number 2, customers. Number 3, suppliers. Number 4, service providers. Number 5, influencers. Number 6, community. And number 7, charity and the world. And as I mentioned throughout, that there will be measures of positive environmental impact across all of those. There will be positive relationships being formed that are fair and equitable for everyone involved across all of those relationships. And similar to that, similar to fairness and equity, is this idea of thoughtfulness and kindness, which can also permeate all of those relationships. Large, well-funded organizations and businesses are in a unique position to have these broad impacts on the world, on people's day-to-day life, on the environment. And there's a big responsibility there because large organizations and businesses can also have detrimental impacts. One single decision that echoes across an entire global organization can either create great good or can result in significant harm and detriment to many and to the environment. So, where individuals may not be able to have a huge impact, unless we look at that collectively, large organizations can. And we can leverage that by doing all we can to encourage organizations and businesses to have positive interactions across all of these seven relationships. Well, that's about all I have for this episode of the podcast. I appreciate you taking time to listen. Thankful to all of those who subscribe and share and click like and comment. And I look forward to sharing more with you again soon. Take care.